We present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello! And welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the BBC's Newsbeat website, read by Diana Speed.
A hen party going to Magaluf was removed from a plane for wearing offensive T-shirts. Airline Jet 2 said the women who were flying from East Midlands Airport to Mallorca were given several chances to cover up their T-shirts before they were removed by the flight crew.
Our thanks to Jan Hailwood for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Helen Lewis. And opposite them, on my left, Simon Evans and stand-up comedian Desiree Birch. Jeremy, who were a less than magnificent seven?
Well, there was the seven-way leaders debate, and there was an absence. Theresa May didn't show, and she left Amber Rudd in a rather invidious position. Amber Rudd sort of did all right. Theresa May was out meeting the people in a sort of heavily guarded factory that makes lemon curd or nerve gas or something. She was sort of closely vetted group of Tory activists and some selected journalists who've been driven there blindfold. And she said this rather weird thing. They said, why aren't you going to do the debate? And she said, well, because, you know, Jeremy Corbyn just likes being on telly when he should be thinking about the Brexit negotiations. I thought, no, you should be thinking about the Brexit negotiations, but you decided to have an election instead. But perhaps she's saying that maybe Jeremy Corbyn does need to be thinking about the Brexit negotiations.
How did the Home Secretary, Amber Rudd, suggest Jeremy Corbyn might fund his manifesto promises?
Oh, with the magic money tree. She went into a very long discussion of the rules of Monopoly, and she appears to be playing some crazy version of Monopoly that no one else played, right? When she had yellow money that she was spending one thing on. I thought she did quite well, but she was a bit headmistressy, wasn't she? It was a bit, it's your time, you're wasting. And actually it turned out that everyone else had quite a lot of time to waste.
You look at it two ways. She was either sort of bravely standing in for her absent leader or preparing her challenge.
Yeah.
Her absent-minded leader. Because she's similar to, in one way, she looks like a spanker, doesn't she? Because the Tory backbenchers... the Tory backbenchers were all sent away to aristocratic detention centres age six, where they had to stay until they were 21, and they all like a spanky lady. And they do. You can see them. I've been very naughty, Amber. I've been a very bad boy.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no point pretending this is just opinion. It is fact.
There was a report that at least, I think, one journalist said at least two people in the Tory party come up to me and said that they referred to Theresa May as mummy.
Oh. I think it's time for my feed, Prime Minister. Could you change me? I've done a nasty. This thing about
we know what she was doing during last night's debate.
This thing about financial probity is a real canard, because the Tories borrowed money and they printed money, but they called it quantitative easing, which meant only financial institutions benefited from it, because most money is created by banks. When you get a mortgage, a man doesn't sort of come round and give you some coins in a leather purse that you take to Rightmove and they give you a flat.
Well, actually, my bank, that is what they do. But you do pay extra for that, but it is a lot more rewarding as an experience.
Who made a rather personal attack on UKIP leader Paul Nuttall?
Leanne Wood was lovely, she said. Because he said, like, there'll be no divorce settlement, we won't be paying any money. And she said, you're the sort of bloke that would walk out of a real divorce without any settlement. You bastard, you. And the CSA will be after you, you bastard.
Magnanimously, this is the big debate, or to put it more accurately, the debate between the leaders or representatives of the political parties, which took place on Wednesday night. Taking questions from the audience, as well as responding to each other, it gave the British public a much-needed insight into seven people, one of whom, in the very near future, will not be Prime Minister. All seven participants stood behind podiums, and the whole thing looked remarkably like a daytime quiz show forged in the very depths of hell. One highlight came when Caroline Lucas answered two questions on climate change correctly and got to play for the motorhome. UKIP's Paul Nuttall spent the entire debate in a state of non-stop indignation, his eyebrows permanently raised as if even they were trying to disassociate themselves with what was coming out of his mouth. The UKIP leader managed to say Britain first several times during the debate, which could just have been a Freudian slip by Paul Pissbucket Bumfingers. Lib Dem leader Tim Farron chose throughout to adopt the sort of intense chumminess of a man approaching tables at a harvester to perform close-up magic uninvited. Also this week, the SNP launched their manifesto under the aspirational and optimistic slogan, "Use down south are all a bag of shite." 2 points to Jeremy. Helen, whose lead may be disappearing?
Well, we've had it's not a poll, I will be very clear about not calling it a poll. We've had a seat projection from YouGov, which has the Tories not even making an overall majority. And actually, overall, all the polls have showed that the Tory leader's pretty much halved over the course of May. I can't tell you how upset I am at the concept of another election happening. But the trouble is, have you seen the film Up? You know that dog that goes, squirrel, and then the dog looks around. That's what polls do to an election campaign. Someone goes, poll, and we all go, and our heads whip round, and you stop talking about whatever it was you were talking about. I feel like at this point we should just look into the entrails of a pig.
Was that a David Cameron reference? Because that's a bit...
What an appalling remark. Are you upset by the way things are going, Simon?
I mean, I read a few months ago that there is a growing body of opinion that believes that everything that we experience as reality is, in fact, a computer simulation. And when I first read about this, I was sceptical. But the way that events are accelerating at the moment does feel awfully like somebody is playing this universe and got a bit bored during the early part of the centuries. Every bizarre thing that you think couldn't possibly happen. 3 years ago, you know, Leicester City, Donald Trump, Brexit, Jeremy Corbyn just being leader of the Labour Party seemed bizarre enough. And you could get, I think, 200-1 on him being the next Prime Minister, and it's now about 3-1. So, you know, with the general flow of events as it is, I fully expect to be rebooted by this time next week and it won't really matter anymore.
You made an interesting point that nobody 2 years ago would have thought that Corbyn could become leader of the Labour Party. If you'd asked me 2 years ago which of my friends was most likely to become leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy would have come about 20th, somewhere after Tim Brooke Taylor. Just shows that you know, your expectations can be confounded. And I might be going to the House of Lords quite soon. £300 a day, I tell you, I'm going.
Okay. How would you call it, Desiree, do you think?
I mean, unfortunately, I've heard too much about this election and everyone's kind of like, I mean, the same thing's going to happen. It's going to be, you know, Tories in power and a mix-up of seats and probably some coalition thing, which is weird to me that there's just not one outright winner scooping it up and being a big bad boss, because that's what I'm accustomed to now. It's just like King Kong in a long tie. Just like... I want to be cynical. I watched the debates. I loved listening to everything Caroline Lucas said, but I know she's like a green and everyone's like, that's great. We're never going to do any of that. Thank you so much. You know, it sounds like who's going to win is who thought she was going to win before she's called the election.
What image did she use to describe Jeremy Corbyn when it came to Brexit?
I thought I couldn't tell a joke, but she really cannot tell a joke. She went, imagine if you will, Jeremy Corbyn, naked and alone. And then she went, yes, I know, it's terrifying. And you just thought, well, now everyone's just thinking about you naked.
I think he should issue the challenge. All right, Theresa, you and me.
Trying to strip debate the audience votes at the end of each round. It is extraordinary that polls are still given any credibility at all, though. I mean, after the last couple of years that they've had, they've been worse than useless. There's no other business that I can think of that could be so repeatedly, utterly worthless. It's like going to a steakhouse and not getting a medium when you ordered a rare, but instead just being given a plimsoll that's on fire.
Intermittently, these are the latest polling figures, which consistently show a narrowing of the Conservative lead over Labour, with a new YouGov poll even suggesting that there could be a hung parliament. As always with these polls, we recommend you take them with a pinch of salt and a large helping of this is probably bollocks. The poll does have a very wide margin of error, calculated by YouGov as almost 0.01 Diane Abbott's. Hung Parliament would be a terrible outcome. Will no one think of poor Jeremy Vine having to demonstrate all possible outcomes to the general public, armed with nothing more than a green screen, a dressing-up box, and a staggering lack of inhibitions? On Tuesday, Theresa May said Jeremy Corbyn would be alone and naked during the Brexit negotiations. Stick an apple in his mouth and you have my number two Brexit-based erotic fantasy. I'm not going to tell you exactly what number one is, but it involves David Davis, a frozen condom full of Tizer, and a copy of the Treaty of Lisbon. George Osborne's Evening Standard this week described the Conservative manifesto as the most disastrous in history, to which we find ourselves asking two questions. What did you put in the last manifesto about an EU referendum, George? And why do you now find yourself editing the Evening Standard? 2 points to Helen. Simon, who's come undone in front of the ladies?
Jeremy Corbyn, having weathered the Paxman storm quite successfully, then came rather undone in front of Emma Barnett, I believe her name is, the presenter on Women's Hour, who invited him on to discuss his plans for state provision of nursery places and found him unable to name a figure which would relate to the cost implications, despite the fact that he was launching this policy on the day. And there was a sort of embarrassing interlude during which Jeremy was passed various pieces of paper, an iPad, a number of beads, an abacus, a photograph of his son. I apologise if I sound like a ridiculous Victorian old snob, but I do find the level of intellectual capacity of our would-be leaders at this particular election woefully short. As became clear when we were watching Jeremy Corbyn's very affable appearance on The One Show, he had insufficient A-level results to have gained a place at North East London Polytechnic in the late 1970s. His hobby is going around collecting manhole covers. His counterpart, Theresa May, just doesn't seem to be able to string the sort of sentence together that a Gladstone or a Disraeli would have recognised as such. Their second tier are absolutely woeful. Where are the people who should be leading this country? Where is the brain power? Well, have they all just buggered straight off to Silicon Valley upon graduation? I mean, what's happening?
Well, they're all looking on and making snide remarks,
I mean. I suppose so.
I think what we should do is every country should elect governments for other countries, not like Britain used to do, involving... Not with ships and armies and stuff. Because, like, if Trump tried to be president here, I mean, you just... Oi, Trump, you idiot, what's that on your head, you bird? Oi, get out of my cab. Your tie's shut in the door, you plonker. And he'd just be a laughing stock.
Which country would you like to be in charge of? Do you think, who should we take
I've
first?
Never been to Ecuador. I've always liked the sound of it. I don't know what goes on there, but I know they've got tropical rainforests. And probably nice coffee. So
you should appoint one of their giant tortoises as a president for life. That would create stability.
I saw a clip of that Women's Hour interview. I felt really bad for Jeremy Corbyn because, like, no one can use their phone or their iPad while everybody's looking. You know, it's one of those, like, okay, hurry up, take a picture of us. And everyone's like, okay. And then the calculator app comes up, you know. Could he not just say, like, I don't have the figure off the top of my head. We had a bunch of really experty experts working on the figure, and I have it written down. Can you let me find said figure? And, you know, and fill it with, like, a folksy tale while he was looking for it. Like, he could have pulled that off. He wears jumpers. He could do that, you know?
He's much more relaxed on telly. Most people, you feel you're more under pressure on TV. And yet, without the camera to relax him, he seemed to sort of unravel. It's a bit like my grandma, who was a radio operator in the First World War, but never mastered the telephone. If it was HQ calling, she was fine. But if it was a close relative, she went to pieces.
Also, Women's Hour is the most terrifying radio show to appear on of all of them. There is always someone in the green room who's there to talk about urinary incontinence.
And if someone's patch has fallen off, you're in serious trouble in that room. But the thing is, the thing that you must remember is the thing that you always forget, isn't it? Because it was obviously people who said, Jeremy, whatever you do, don't forget the costing. That's the one thing you've got, and that's too much pressure. It's like Prince Philip meeting a foreign person.
The thing that was brilliant was Jeremy Corbyn on The One Show. He talked about jam, he talked about drains.
And he did very well to look relaxed on that show, because I've done The One Show, and their teeth are blinding. My cataracts were cured by going on there.
How does it all look from your perspective, Desiree?
Quite confusing. I am always asking people who live here who are super lefty, why they dislike Corbyn, why they're so angry with him.
Possibly something to do with the fact that he spent most of his political career as a sworn enemy of the state. I don't know. I mean, that, I'm just guessing.
Well, you have to remember that my country's leader is an enemy of sense, so... Jeremy's got some numbers. He wants to help people. I'm all for putting my eggs in that basket. Because my basket is just a gaping hole in the universe.
And he doesn't collect the covers, does he? He just likes them.
He's interested
in... He rubs them, doesn't he?
It's a rubbing thing, isn't it? You rub them, I think.
Like brass
No, that's if you want a genie to appear. No, frotting. He takes pictures
It's a sort of
them.
Frotting. You sort of frot them.
Is that right, sir?
Yeah.
And how does that help?
Charcoal. Yeah.
Is that what it is? So he goes and he puts a bit of paper down and then rubs the chart, and that's what he does. So he's not collecting manhole covers.
No, because that's what personal injury lawyers do.
Promptly, this is Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn's appearance on Woman's Hour, where Corbyn was stumped by a question about childcare costs, but later redeemed himself with a surprisingly moving performance as Harriet in the serialised story of a woman struggling with gender issues against a backdrop of the 18th century arts and crafts movement. Earlier this week, Jeremy Corbyn appeared on The One Show, which was hugely enjoyable viewing, especially for anyone who's been advised by their doctor to under no circumstances allow their body to produce adrenaline. Unlike Theresa May's husband, Corbyn's wife couldn't make it onto The One Show sofa due to a prearranged meeting with her self-respect. Also this week, Corbyn appeared on a Mum's Net web chat, where he was accused of only answering easy questions like, what is your favourite biscuit? Rather than more difficult questions like, what biscuits did you serve the IRA when you had tea with them? 2 points to Simon. Desiree, who may not always have Paris?
Really, none of us, if this deal goes through, because it'll be underwater. But yes, Trump is probably now, as we're recording this, pulling out of the Paris Accord, pulling the United States out of the climate change agreement to allow us to have air. I don't know. He could be coming to his senses right now, but, you know, he doesn't ever do that. Like, yeah. He comes to his senses as often as, like, Melania comes to the White House, which is just, like, never, you know. I read this report in which he said the accord would cost trillions of dollars with no tangible benefit, he said while breathing air. So, yeah, he's currently ruining the environment because America is the second largest producer of greenhouse gases after China. And even China's still in the agreement. Only Syria and Nicaragua are like, nah, everyone hates us anyway. Doesn't matter. Yeah.
What can you expect from a man who's actually named after a greenhouse gas?
This is fair. But yeah, I mean, I'm amazed that he's fathered 5 children and now he's interested in pulling out of something. Like, too little, too late.
This is always the problem with Trump, is that isn't even the craziest story about him this week, right? So the other thing is, having spent an entire election campaign sort of talking about her emails, Hillary's emails, we're going to lock her up, it turns out he's been going around giving out his phone number, his personal phone number. And then I found out who he's been giving his personal phone number to. So Emmanuel Macron, France. Justin Trudeau of Canada.
All the hot ones.
And the president of Mexico is a fox. Okay. The man is lonely. He's lonely.
Just 3 a.m. texts of who dis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Simon, are you for or against the Paris Accord?
Well, I suppose as the sort of token Nazi on the panel... I don't like a sort of monolithic consensus on Radio 4 panel. But a help. Yeah, OK, he's an idiot. Yeah, obviously. There is still this tiny, tiny glimmer of hope, isn't there, that Trump is playing some three-dimensional chess, as his fans want us to believe. He just completely bamboozles everyone with his extraordinary apparent lunacy, and that suddenly it's all going to fall into place and we will all realise that he's been playing on an entirely different level from the rest of us. But that does seem to be a narrowing possibility.
Previously, this is the news that Donald Trump is to pull out of Paris, yet another move he's copied from Hitler. Trump says leaving the Paris climate change agreement could lead to more jobs, with millions of Americans being employed in the future as feral desert scavengers. Trump continues to overestimate how well an overweight simpleton will fare in the post-apocalyptic world he's creating. Donald, all the gold lifts in the world won't save you come Cannibal Tuesday. Trump told other world leaders they could call him on his cell phone. Trust me, Donald, the last thing you want to do is be dragged into Macron and Trudeau's WhatsApp group. It's all baby pictures and plans for a caravanning holiday that will never happen. Also this week, Nigel Farage has been named as a person of interest in the FBI investigation into US links with Russia, which is striking given that Nigel Farage is not normally a person of interest even at a dinner party. Where... one in which the only attendees are you and Nigel Farage. 2 points to Desiree. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Helen have 4, and so too do Simon and Desiree. We start round two with an extract from the Northern Ireland Humanists Facebook page.
Come meet like-minded folk at our secular brunch for Vickers Restaurant in County Armagh.
Thanks to David Harrison for sending us that. Jeremy, have a listen to this.
Let's fly away, away, let's fly away. Let's make hay before we get too old and gray. If you love me as you say, don't you worry, come what may, let's fly away.
Jeremy, who was not the world's favourite airline this week?
The clue's in the clue, isn't it? It's British Air. I've always not quite liked British Airways. I quite like Ryanair. There's your seat, there's no frills, sit anywhere you like. If you survive, you'll be doing well. British Airways has always been that, oh, welcome to British Airways. And I mean... I'm not anti-British. I like the word British in front of museum, for example, or broadcasting, or even rail, to be honest. But not so much in front of National Party or Airways. There's a smugness, there's a hubris, and they've had it coming. This week they had to turn all their planes off and turn them on again, and they still didn't work.
Are they said at all what's to blame, BA?
I saw a thing saying their uninterruptible power source was interrupted.
Right. Does it mean uninterruptible as in it can't be interrupted or it really mustn't?
When you find these incredibly high-tech things break down, it's often something incredibly low-tech. The entirety of Ukraine lost its internet once because someone put a spade through the cable. And the Large Hadron Collider went down last year because a weasel immolated itself in the power supply.
Wow.
Oh, I hate when that happens.
Have you any experience of British Airways, Desiree?
Oh, God, no, I can't afford that. No, I'm like, if it's not Norwegian or Ryan or, you know, EasyJet, I've never flown it.
You have one of those United Airlines flights where they have the special treatment.
Yeah, deep tissue with shiatsu massage with every United flight. Yeah. Very, very deep.
People do take this high-tech stuff for granted, though. The fact is that flying is now just so available to everybody. And, I mean, I remember when you used to want to go on holiday, you had to go to Thomas Cook in the High Street, because there was no internet in those days. And you go to Thomas Cook and you say, hello, I'd like to go somewhere, please. And they'd say, have you thought about abroad? I said, I don't know, what's it like? Everyone's very friendly. Good, I'll go there. And they would just give you a holiday. You didn't have to research. It would just be an envelope. They'd say, these are your documents. Your name is Armand. You're a Belgian commercial traveller. You went, you know. Now you spend years online like a demented archivist. And you're just about to click to accept. You say, oh, no, someone on TripAdvisor's criticised a soap dish. Ah! Oh, that's years of research down the drain. Oh.
Vanishingly, this is the catastrophic IT disaster suffered by British Airways, leading to the cancellation of hundreds of flights. Some have blamed all this on a power surge, others on poor contingency planning. I, however, shall continue to pin the whole thing on the Wright brothers and their perverse mocking of the will of God that only ever invited the harshest of retribution. Nearly 300 flights were cancelled worldwide on Saturday, with reports of families sleeping at airports on yoga mats, which can't have been comfortable, as that is not what yoga mats are designed for. They're supposed to be rolled up and kept under the bed for all eternity. As a result of the chaos, BA were unable to process bookings or contact staff, except by sending up a plane with a canister of red smoke to spray the words, "Does anyone have a working number for Rob from IT support?" in the skies over Hounslow. It took until Wednesday for BA to reunite passengers with their bags. "We've had a lovely week in Gran Canaria, and I don't know what all the fuss is about," commented a lovely couple of matching Samsonite suitcases. According to EU regulations, passengers whose flights are cancelled or delayed by 3 hours or more can claim compensation. I think I can speak for everyone when I say the sooner we're free from the tyranny of these oppressive consumer rights, the better. 2 points to Jeremy. Helen, who's helping to fill a funding vacuum?
This is the news that the government has unerringly identified the biggest group of work-shy people in our society. Toddlers. There's a school, basically, which has been forced to make the kids do the cleaning of the classroom. They've had such big cutbacks, they say they can't afford to have a cleaner, and then the kids are going to have to clean the classrooms themselves. I looked into it. Other stuff that schools are doing, renting themselves out as wedding venues. One of them's running a craft stall. One of them's running a burger van from that car park. This is a really scary situation in which basically has got no airtime at all, really, during the election. But there is a school funding crisis.
They're collecting money off parents. And can you send us money? They're crowdfunding our kids' education. It's terrible to have to clean your own classroom, especially when it's like your wee on the floor. That is almost rubbing your nose in it, isn't it?
How fair is this, do you think, Simon?
Oh, I'm all for it, obviously, resident Nazi. But speaking from the point of view of somebody with a 9-year-old and a 13-year-old...
Children, the chance, these are,
yes,
are they?
Yes, exactly, oh, yeah. Right. not an actual technical slave, no. We have tried to get them to even learn how to pick up loose towels off the bathroom floor. The idea of corralling them and herding them into any sort of effective cleaning procedure at the end of the day... I think you'd be better off just torching the place and starting from scratch the next morning. This has got to be nothing more than a propaganda exercise, and I wouldn't trust mine to toss burgers either. The wedding venue thing sounds pretty charmless, I have to say. I don't know just how desperate you'd have to be to get married in a school. Yeah. I suppose it would at least be a grim warning of what lay ahead for you.
Better than a crematorium.
Schopenhauer said, at the moment of copulation, the devil's laughter is heard. I think that's that's kind of the extension of that, isn't it?
Wow. Yeah.
But in all seriousness, I mean, you know, it's always very heartwarming when you go to Kenya or somewhere and see where there's some village that's just had a new school installed by one of these charities that I've somehow been cajoled into supporting. And they're enormously grateful for the opportunity to read a book, you know, out in the shade for a couple of hours a day. And they're more than happy to clean up after themselves. And I think it's about time our entitled generation of lazy toddler wannabes, you know, realise that this is the world they're competing with now. And if they're not willing to put in the elbow grease that is going on right now all around, you know, sub-Saharan Africa in the pursuit of an education, then they're going to lose.
Today,
I'm not
children.
Remotely joking about that, by the way.
I think we felt that deeply.
Today, children, we're going to be making trainers.
Well, I mean, cleaning up after themselves is one thing. It's like, oh, yeah, throw a spitball, catch it in the Hoover on the other side of the room. That's fine. But they don't have money for books or pencils or, like, crayons for the kids. Like, they're just like, hey, give us your whole kid and all the tools for educating them. And how about a place to do it at, by the way? You know, like, I feel like there's got to be, well, I was going to say a more creative way, but, like, the right way is to, like, raise the taxes and care about your kids and educate them in the world, the place
Listen,
you want them to
the live. Truth is, artificial intelligence is going to render 90% of education redundant within the next 10 years.
They're you cannot replace school children with robots.
They're reintroducing grammar schools because
the robot,
they know
Simon?
That we only need an elite very soon. We're going to have a universal basic income, which is going to supply everyone with all the games they need to get them through their waking
what
hours.
What money
every
tree
day.
Is that coming yes. from?
The singularity.
Show us your tree.
There very soon will be an AI that can do Radio 4 panel shows.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Prepositionally, this is the news that a primary school in the London borough of Wandsworth is asking older pupils to hoover their own classrooms at the end of the school day in order to save money. And there's not time for the teachers to do it because they've already set aside an hour at the end of each school day to sit in the staff room with their heads in their hands. Actually, we had a similar thing at my school where, after the Year 11 geography field trip, we were all given 36 hours community service. The pupils have to do the hoovering to balance the books. That's certainly according to the 9-year-old who's currently working as the school accountant. Funding per pupil will fall by nearly 3% under the Conservatives, but maybe that's OK now that there's no pressing economic need to teach them French or German. One in six primary schools has asked parents to make donations. The other five can't do anything until everyone stops shouting. Some parents have been asked to donate toilet paper. Other students have been told to shit at the pub across the street, like my uncle. Of course, all this could be solved if we took a more relaxed attitude towards assemblies being sponsored by Big Tobacco. Anyway, the floors are nice and tidy. Now to do something about the asbestos in the roof. 2 points to Helen. Simon, why did one of Britain's heroines get some positive news?
Oh, heroine. OK, so this is Angela Rippon, a veteran newsreader and presenter. It came to light that somebody had failed a drugs test. I think he works at a nuclear facility or something where they're quite strict about this. He'd failed a drugs test because they found traces of opiates in his bloodstream. And he was utterly bamboozled by this and then began to suspect that they were coming from poppy seeds because he was fond of that kind of loaf. And, I mean, this just sounds utterly implausible, but anyway, he raised it with this consumer affairs programme and they decided to look into it, and Angela Rippon ate 5 loaves or something and then had the blood test, and lo and behold, she did indeed have a visible level of... I mean, yeah. I suppose this is... I know I'm harping on this a little bit this evening, but again, the sorry degraded state of our population, that you can no longer eat a poppy seed loaf without being deemed unfit to operate heavy machinery. I mean... There was a time when a certain amount of opium was sort of regarded as a healthy thing to have in your bloodstream if you had a bit of manual labour ahead of you, you know, drowsed with the fume of poppies and so on. I've never tried heroin myself, OK?
You must.
I know.
No wonder you look so tired, Simon.
I've had a couple of codeine, you know, when I've been feeling a bit poorly. I can't believe that the poppy seeds you can ingest through any remotely plausible amount of bread is going to be enough to raise it above the level of... I mean, what is going on, for God's sake? But yes, anyway, so that's it. You can now get... sufficiently off your nut, licking bloomers.
Well, I've never failed a drugs test because I've always had jobs where nobody cares, like teaching in public school. But apparently the amount of opiates in a poppy seed muffin or bagel can vary by a factor of 600. Which is incredible to me that, like, someone at Starbucks could be like, I got some high-grade, high-cut loaf for you right now. Come back, come in the back. Because how would you do loaf? I don't... Anyway.
Crush it and snort it. Yep. Surely.
Well, with wholemeal, you'd never be able to breathe again.
You'd use your blender to turn it into
like
breadcrumbs.
Like a smoothie.
Yeah.
You can't have a drug smoothie. That's the most middle-class thing I've ever heard.
Do the loaves come from Afghanistan, or do they do... Is that... I mean...
I don't know where they come from. Poppies are poppies.
I don't want to think that the bloomers are funding the Taliban. That's my main concern.
Yes, you
I get all my heroin from a farmer's market in Sussex. It's...
Blazingly, this is the news that as part of a TV investigation into drug testing in the workplace, veteran presenter Angela Rippon ate a loaf of poppy seed bread and subsequently tested positive for opiates. This came about after a man was fired from his job at a power station for failing a drugs test and blamed it on the toast he had for breakfast in what, to use the drug testing terminology, is an absolute Wiggins of an excuse. The most difficult part was finding a container big enough for the sample. Honestly, that woman is part Shire horse. The test occurred during the BBC One show Rip Off Britain as part of an item on the poor value of the licence fee. 2 points to Simon. Desiree, have a listen to this. She's watching the detectives. Ooh, he's so cute. She's watching the detectives. When they shoot.
Nice jam.
Desiree, let me take this moment to look at my script and see that they haven't written a question here. So... what do we think of one? It's something to do with...
Desiree, who detected a shortage of police officers?
Yes, yes, yes!
Desiree, who's being hunted by the Met?
Oh, God, that makes it sound so horrible. But really, they're just hunting for more officers amongst the public. They're deputizing anyone, apparently. But they're looking for non-traditional detectives, people like teenagers sitting around on their phones all day to help them with cybercrime, or like, you know, drug dealers to sell you drugs and then drive you around the corner to the police station because you just bought some drugs. But yeah, basically they're offering something like £30,000 as a starting salary for, you know, alternative kinds of detectives to help them with newfangled crime, which is like, that's kind of more than starting PCs make, right? And I guess if you ask Diane Abbott, it's like, you know, 30,000 or 300,000 pounds or 30p or, you know, we'll get back to you. Not sure how much you're making. But yeah, it sounds like a pretty good sort of career move if you want to be a snitch.
If I'm all those old ladies who go for country house weekends and someone is mysteriously murdered, they're quite good at investigating things, aren't they?
That's what they want. Yeah, that is what they want.
Eccentric Belgians with wet, waxed moustaches, people like that.
Because there was a sort of traditional route that you had to sort of be a policeman on the beat and whatever, and then you would earn the rank of detective. But now you can just suddenly apply to be a detective. You don't have to do any of the, I suppose, what, the scary stuff? Just have to wait until the crime's happened and then go and investigate it, rather than, heaven forfend, trying
to... You have to be a maverick, though.
Absolute maverick.
You've got to have demons that you're battling.
Yeah. Or a particular genre of music that you're fond of, which hasn't been done before.
Yeah. We could have one who's come from the future and they'd already know who did everything, wouldn't they?
Yeah. AI is going to ruin detective fiction. Do you know what training they get, if any?
They watch all 5 series of Jonathan Creek.
Well, there's 18 weeks training, so there is time to do that. But it's all
Lewis,
just
a bit of Lewis.
That's right. Yeah, Columbo.
Got the feels. I watched a whole episode of Columbo. I was at the gym the other day, and I got on the cross trainer, and I had my headphones because normally I watch the news. And Columbo was on the Columbo Gold channel. And I watched a whole episode of Columbo. It was brilliant. And it made me enjoy the cross trainer. Excellent.
Do you remember who did it?
Well, they tell you at the start. And then you spend the rest of the episode forgetting. That's how it works. It was the culprit that did it. But I always feel sorry for actors whose first break is in Lewis. And they say, yeah, her backstory is that she's had a very unhappy relationship with her partner. And the scene opens and you're lying on a slab. I hope you're okay with nudity and wounds. You okay with wounds? Yeah, no, you will be. Yeah, you'll be dead. It's non-speaking. Yeah, you'll be covered by a sheet for most of the time. Yeah.
My friend, one of his first acting jobs was playing a barman in a detective series, and the filming was stalled. They don't have much time to rehearse, so like, you get your lines, get your costume, I just go in there, do the thing, you'll come in there, you can see where it is going. So he was being the barman in this scene, and somebody came and he went, "Somebody call the police!" But the person saying "somebody call the police" was a person dressed as a policeman. And the line was meant to be, "Somebody call the police?" A question. Anybody know how many detectives the Met currently has?
4. One from the future, one who's an alcoholic, one who secretly murders people, and the other one who's invisible.
Close. It's actually 5,500 detectives, which is just 1,000 fewer than ITV3.
Remember when we had a series called The Chinese Detective?
No.
Did what it said on the... It was David Yip, who was from Liverpool's very ancient Chinese community. It was called The Chinese Detective, and that was supposed to be the interesting thing about him.
So it's like The Singing Detective was about a detective who sings?
But it was a bit more nuanced than that, The Singing Detective, because it had multi-layers, whereas this is just... And the hook is, he's Chinese.
I liked Eddie Shoestring, who was not really a detective at all, but worked on local radio and solved crimes in his spare time.
I think this idea is going to work really well in this country, because every time I've talked to a British person here, they always interrupt the conversation and go, "Do I detect an accent?" So perceptive, you guys. Really.
Rakishly, this is the news that the Metropolitan Police are inviting people to apply to become detectives without having previously worked as uniformed beat officers. The aim is to attract people with different skills and backgrounds who might otherwise not want to join. For example, murderers. All you need to join is a relevant degree, a troubling relationship with alcohol, and access to a classic car. Detectives currently have to serve as uniformed beat officers, but it's not always been the case. Jessica Fletcher was a novelist, Cadfael was a monk, and Miss Marple was famously a greeter at TK Maxx. New recruits are being taught the latest detecting techniques, such as instead of staying over in a country house for the whole weekend, just jumping ahead and arresting the most famous actor in the room. This drive will finally give community support officers the opportunity to pursue their dreams and become policemen. 2 points to Desiree. Before we reveal the final score, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share?
No.
Any... I've asked them, they said no. I can't...
Yes.
Jeremy. No, well, we've all had a wonderful evening. But before we reveal final scores, I think it's only fair to say that there's a marvellous thing we do at the end of the show where people get a chance to read out something that a member of the public has, for some reason, inexplicably found amusing and sent into the office. Jeremy. Jeremy, what inaccessible piece of balderdash are you going to read out for us now that will have everybody staring into their hands?
You really are a perfect perisher, Miles. This Miles was sent in by Jeff Nathanson, and he heard a piece of commentary from Phil Neville on 5 Live this week. The design of this arena really helps the atmosphere. It's brilliant. The acoustics are the best I've ever seen.
Helen.
Michael Scott saw this in a Wildlife Trust magazine. Rush Meadows is a quiet and secluded haven for wildlife situated on the outskirts of Dereham. It sits in an unlikely location hidden behind Dereham sewage works, where from the banks of the river, visitors may be treated to the plop of a water vole as it slips back into the water.
Simon.
Yes, Miles, isn't it? Yes, Miles. This is from James Bell, who heard it on the BBC World Service. A turtle in Thailand that had an operation to remove nearly 1,000 coins from her stomach 2 weeks ago has unfortunately died from blood poisoning. Named Omzin, meaning piggy bank, she was found to have been eating coins thrown into a public pond where she lived. The operation to remove the coins was partly covered by public donations.
Desiree.
Darren Pryor saw this on the Reading Freegal website, which is for people to get rid of unwanted things. Offer, clothes hangers. I've got a black bag of coat and clothes hangers. Some kids in there as well. Reluctant to send to landfill.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Helen have 8, but this week's winners are Simon and Desiree with 9. Yeah! Before we leave you, here is a cutting from Graham Lowry, who saw this notice on a yoga centre in Bromsgrove.
Please note that this week's postnatal yoga class is postponed due to maternity leave.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Helen Lewis, Simon Evans and Desiree Birch. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Diana Speed. The chair's script was written by John Hunter, James Kettle and David Reed, with additional material by Jenny LaVille. The producer was Joe Nunnery, and it was a BBC Studios production.